Twin Cities News Talk, AM 1130 and 103.5 FM. Justice and Drew along with Sam, and we've brought in our French linguistics expert of Jason Flores.
Yeah, he came in slinging insults at
me. It was necessary. I don't know what it was.
My 1 year of high school French expertise.
I don't know what you were doing. That was sounding weird.
I definitely have never taken French. Got to talk to my brother for that one. He's the French expert.
No, my French does not go beyond ratatouille. That was French, right?
I think so.
I can make a really good take and bake baguette from Target. Right? You put it in the oven for 10 minutes. I do a really good job at that.
Baguette.
I think it's like law in France that if you're going to be walking on the streets, you have to be carrying a bag with a baguette sticking out of it.
Oh, for sure.
That's like the stereotype in every movie.
See, I thought baguette was specific to Lord of the Rings. Sorry.
Hmm.
Oh, boy. That just brought everything to a screeching halt. Hey, Drew.
Can we, like, restart the segment or
something? Speak more French.
Jason Flores from Americans for Prosperity wanted to bring you in to sort of get your thoughts on how the session wrapped up over the weekend. It was chaotic. It was crazy. At the end of the day, most of what they wanted to do got passed. Some things didn't, of course. But now we're sitting here sort of just waiting to see how big Governor Dayton's tantrum will end up being.
Well, and that's really the problem. At the end of the session, he decided to throw a tantrum, I don't know if there's another word for it, and go with a complete my way or the highway approach to negotiating.
Right.
And then still is trying to say, oh, it's the legislature. Look, the Minnesota legislature did the exact thing that they set out to do. They talked about tax conformity. They talked about passing the transportation bill. They talked about some supplemental funding. They have done all of those things, right? And then they get to negotiations with the governor. He's just like, nope. I don't want that. I want this other thing we talked about before, and then refuses to negotiate. So they went ahead and passed the stuff anyway, because guess what? These are the things that the Minnesota voters wanted and voted for in the course of the last couple election cycles. Governor Dayton himself has said elections have consequences.
Right.
And yet, instead of coming to the middle, meeting, trying to find middle ground, trying to find some form of compromise. I hate to break it to the governor, but compromise isn't you getting your way on all 117 problems you have with a bill, right? Instead of doing that, he comes back and just kind of disappears that last day of session. So,
well, this is what I want. This is one of the things that I wanted to ask you. And again, from Americans for Prosperity, Jason Flores joins us in studio. Is one of the complaints that we've keep seeing since Dayton threw his tantrum was that. And the Star Tribune made mention of this. Dayton made mention of this, that the GOP didn't, that those in the legislature, they didn't compromise. And I wanted to sort of pick your brain, you know, honestly, you know, how much compromise do you think that the GOP-led legislature actually did? Like, from my view, there was a lot of compromise, and they tried to make some changes after Dayton, you know, threw his fit. But I was very curious to sort of get your thoughts on that.
Yeah, first, a couple of very concrete examples. First, in that big omnibus prime supplemental spending bill, which, first, let's put this into perspective. You're talking about $140 million over the course of a $50 billion biennial budget. So I can't do the math quite that fast in my head, but that's less than 1% by far. That's less than half of a percent.
Okay.
So we're making this huge deal out of this tiny little fraction of the state budget. So number one, I think that the legislature, we can get to this, but overall they're going to be judged on what they've done in 2 years, not just what they did this legislative session.
Sure.
But specific to compromise, they compromised in a couple very specific ways. First, on the tax bill, the Senate, for example, had in their automatic triggers for tax cuts, which is a great idea. We have so many things in our state budget that puts more government spending or higher taxes just automatically on people. Why shouldn't we, when we have a projected surplus, automatically right off the top, give part of that back to taxpayers in terms of rate cuts? It's a great idea. Mm-hmm. They absolutely should be paid first. It is taxpayers, their money by definition.
Right.
Governor hated that idea. Obviously, he wants government to have as much money as they possibly can get, and then government will decide how to spend it and whether or not to give it back. Thank you very much. So Senate pulls that out, and the House pulls that out. That doesn't go into the final tax bill, right? Then you look at this omnibus prime bill that I mentioned. Governor sends over a list of 117 different demands, from big, massive policy shifts to like a two-word problem, right? But designed to make it look like there's all these problems, 117 of them. The conference committee works through, and they address about 60 of them. And then they start putting out the feelers to the governor, like, hey, we've done about 60. What do you got? What can you live with? Where can we compromise? You know, we've addressed over half of these concerns. And the governor, like, well, what do you mean? You got the other half to do yet. Don't come to me until all my concerns. What?
Yeah. Right.
What kind of a world is he living in? Oh, I remember. He's living in a world where he thinks he's a dictator of this state, and he already tried to dissolve parliament once.
Right.
Right?
Right.
And now, fast forward to this session where that's how we're coming into this session with literally no funding for the legislature.
Mm-hmm.
Don't forget about that. He changed his mind at the end of the session last year after he literally used his own hand to sign a bill. He got done and said, oh, wait, I don't want that anymore, but I can't do anything about it. What am I going to do? Let's just dissolve parliament.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, come on. That's what you're dealing with here in terms of changing and the way he negotiates.
And that's why that was one of the points I wanted to make regarding how the Republicans handled the end of the session when the governor sort of extracted himself and said, here are my demands, either meet them or don't.
Take it or leave it.
Veto if you don't. You know, based on his behavior at the end of sessions past, when he has changed his mind after negotiations, when he has not negotiated in good faith, when he has defunded the legislature via a line item veto, on and on and on. We got 8 years of a track record with this guy,
right,
of being erratic, of changing his mind, of not negotiating in good faith, of saying one thing in meetings and another thing to the press. I don't blame the Republicans at all for how they handled the end of this session. In fact, I would have liked to see them go even further and say, we are the legislature. We are a co-equal branch of government. We were put here by Minnesotans. We're going to pass whatever the hell we want to pass, and you're going to deal with it, Governor Dayton. Because you can't negotiate with this guy. You can't trust that what he says or what his staff says in the meetings is actually what's going to happen when the bill reaches his desk.
Well, and the point being, the Minnesota legislature did compromise. The examples I already gave.
Yep.
Plus, the governor, as ridiculous as his very last minute demand for additional education funding was, and we can talk about the ins and outs of that specific education funding, but a last minute demand that then he vetoes the tax bill over, completely unrelated bill. The legislature then comes back and says, all right, how can we put together some funds for education without simply giving districts that are operating their budgets very poorly, how can we get some additional resources into this without kind of rewarding them for this bad behavior? So they come back, they give $50 million of new money, they give access to districts for $175 million more of current dollars that are trapped behind, you know, training restrictions, other kind of set-aside restrictions that they have, and they say, all right, we're going to get rid of this red tape that's getting in the way of you using funds that you already have so that you can make it through. We've got an entire new budget cycle next year.
Yeah.
Revisit this, talk about this, hopefully put some more accountability in place for these school districts. This freeing up this money that the legislature did, Dayton himself has done this before. He used these exact same kind of bureaucratic restrictions, relief of those, to get more money to school districts before in 2011. And now when the legislature comes through and does it, it's disingenuous and it's all these other words that he described, and it's not enough. It's never enough. Well, you changed your mind about what it's enough. You wanted $150 million of new funding. They gave you $225, and it's still not good enough for him.
So I'll make this one a little bit less convoluted. What gives? Why? I mean, who stands to benefit? Did he throw this fit and all the vetoes for a specific reason, or is it just him? Because it doesn't appear to me that this is going to bode well moving forward for the DFL, especially when it comes to the tax conformity.
Right, and I think that's going to be, I mean, it's going to have to play out, but I absolutely agree. Two things. One, we've already seen the benefits of federal tax reform work throughout this country. We've seen money come back from overseas. We've seen new jobs announced. We've seen bonuses. We've seen hiring. We've seen raises given out to employees. There's no question that the way that the feds did tax reform, it is a good thing. There is also no way that the governor, with the entire House up for re-election this summer, could let the Minnesota Republicans have a victory on tax reform, because then they can take credit for what is going right. They can take credit for putting money back in the hands of Minnesota families and businesses. It's absolutely the right thing to do, and he had to make sure that didn't happen. So he creates this huge demand that they'll never, ever be able to meet of $140 million due to schools that they don't want to do. Then they find a way to do it, and so he has to dig his heels in even more and say, oh, that's not good enough either. He couldn't give House Republicans a win on tax relief any more so than he doesn't want to do it anyway, because, again, that takes money away from government and puts it back to private citizens.
Well, and not just on tax relief, but on anything. I mean, that was kind of my takeaway, was he just flatly refused to allow the GOP to have any type of perceived win whatsoever. And you saw that not just in the tax conformity, but the Minlars, I mean, the Minlars one.
Yeah.
I mean, that to me, I mean, they're both just astonishing to see, but the Minlars one is just, it's, you gotta be kidding
me. He did not want to give Republicans the ability to go around and say, we passed a bill that kept your deputy registrars afloat.
Right.
He wouldn't do that. He's willing to let
burn it all.
He's willing to burn it down. He's willing to burn everything around him in order to deny the GOP any positive narratives going into the midterms. The problem is, now the narrative is, you guys had enough of this? You know, if I'm a GOP politician running for office, whatever office it may be, I'm going around everybody and goes, you guys sick of this yet?
Right.
You know, are you tired of this yet? Are you tired of this, of government being this dysfunctional yet? Because as long as Governor Dayton's in office, and, you know, if you're going to keep going down this path, this ain't going to get any better.
Well, and that's what the governor is trying to do. He has seen, he has been here for, he has benefited from. He got the majority in that one cycle he had the majority for, because he succeeded in creating a mentality of this do-nothing legislature, right? And it's benefited. And generally, that kind of stuff has hurt Republicans in the past, both federally or locally, when you can say that they didn't do anything. And he's operating in, I think what's true, in this, like, what have you done for me lately kind of world, where if you didn't do it at the end of May in this particular legislative session, it doesn't count for nothing, right? And that's patently not true. And I think it's going to backfire, because it's not a question of the House and the Senate couldn't get their stuff together. They couldn't pass bills. They couldn't send him stuff that are, you know, viable, realistic, partly compromised bills. They did that. This tax bill that he's railing upon in big picture negativity, this tax bill he's railing on passed off the floor with bipartisan support.
Right.
Multiple Democrats in tough districts took this vote because they know how good tax reform is, and he's still digging his heels in. That's how much he wants to create this do nothing. It's going to come back and bite him, because it's his vetoes that are going to create the do nothing side of this.
Well, and I don't want to let any of the DFL off the hook in what I'm going to say next, because certainly when it comes to Minlars, when they tried to override it, some DFLers hopped on board with Dayton and didn't allow that to
They absolutely
to happen.
Showed their true colors. Right. That was the easiest vote they ever could have taken to actually solve that situation, and they played politics instead.
But the thing that I noticed the most was in those interviews with Governor Mark Dayton that took place at the end of the weekend going into Monday, the perception to me was that he was just on a one-man crusade. I'm going out there, and it's just this is me, because I didn't see a leader being interviewed. I didn't see a governor being interviewed. I saw just a political hack who was going out and talking to these, you know, to the media, throwing his hissy fit and just pointing fingers, being hypocritical, and not answering even any of the questions directly. It feels like he was on his own little crusade.
But to that, that's what really got me at the end of this session, was he didn't even seem. Look, I know it's his last term and he, you know, lame duck, checked out, whatever else, but it's also your last chance to affect that legacy that you think you're going to have, right? And in all of this end of session, the interviews and the talking points and what the governor was saying, none of it was the level of specificity that I would have expected. This is a governor who, I mean, partially thanks to his speechwriters, as was pointed out to me in the past, he always throws in, he's always got numbers. He's always got the rankings. He's always got the dollars. He's got his stats right. You know, that is a part of the argument. And at the end of the session, he wasn't doing any of it. It was tax bill. It just gives more money to rich people. It just gives more money. It was these tired Democratic tropes.
Right.
And no deeper than a meme level of, we have to keep money away from evil well, okay, but if you could go through these bills and tell me, you know, in these press conferences, how is this $140 million for schools going to help, right? How is your plan versus but instead it was just, evil Republicans are bad, so we need to, he's only been setting up this narrative. for, I mean, hoping that people don't pay attention to the fact that the legislature did their job, passed a lot of good stuff that Minnesotans want to see, and his vetoes are going to keep it from becoming law.
Oh, the name calling at the end of the session again.
Why would you negotiate with somebody who's just sitting there with that kind of vitriol ripping you apart,
calling you vile, appalling, disgusting? And again, this is not new. We've been dealing with it. It seems to, you know, sort of get a little elevated, a little escalated year upon year. But we've been covering this and talking about this and dealing with this for the entirety of his administration. He'll have a meeting and he'll come out of the meeting and everybody will say, we had a productive meeting and we made some progress and we found some errands. And then he's going to go to the podium and stand in front of the press and call them all vile, disgusting. He likes to use the word intransigent quite often. I mean, this is his pattern. And if you're a Republican legislator, you got to be sitting back going, What? How are we supposed to work with this guy?
Oh, and there's absolutely no pleasing him, because the second that you do or you try to meet one of his demands, he's going to go back and change it again. He talks all the time at the end of the session here. Well, I want this. I need a standalone bill. Send me a standalone bill. Okay, so the legislature sends him a standalone bill. We're going to give money to help deputy registrars hurt by the fact that Minlars isn't working. No more than that.
Right.
It's not even that much money.
Right.
In the grand scheme of things. And he gets this and looks at it, considers it, passed with overwhelming bipartisan support, a muff that they try to veto override on it, the one that you were referring to. He gets it, immediately vetoes it. No, why do you send me this standalone stuff? I need it as part of a comprehensive solution.
but you just said.
Right. And you said that, or, you know, you want $140 million of funding for schools. Okay, well, we can't just open up the checkbook to bad districts that have made poor financial decisions. Terrible example is rewarding their incompetence on top of everything else. So they find a way to let them access existing dollars that they couldn't, right? So then if you really aren't and you really have this crisis, you can access some dollars. You'll make it through until we can do this, you know, full budget cycle again. And then the governor's done the same thing before. And he's like, no, that's not good enough. That's not what I... Come on, man. When's enough? When is enough enough?
Well, the clock's ticking. What is your expectation? Is there any chance it was tantrum, but then at the end of the day he comes back and does the right thing? Do you have any confidence whatsoever? Because it seems to me, let me just add this one little part to it. I know we're up against a break, but it seems to me that in reality he's in a really good position. When you talk about legacy, there was a lot of changes after his hissy fit, right? They did go and compromise. He can easily come back out and say, okay, I'm moving forward on these now. This is what they changed. This is what we got. This is what compromising looks like.
Right. Right.
You know, and again, I'm expecting a lot, you know, even thinking that that's going to happen. But is there a chance that could happen?
I think there is a chance. If you pay attention to the vitriol coming from some of his staff and communicating, they're not going to do it. But hopefully the elder statesman in the room will rise above some of that end of session brinksmanship, that end of session partisanship. We called for that from Americans for Prosperity. It's like, look, this was a tough process. You've got good bills here. This tax bill especially is great for Minnesota, and especially bad for Minnesota when you get into next February and March with it. Then the economic impacts of the cost of compliance of that are terrible. So on some of these bills, he really should step above all of this, sign these bills, and then work on the process moving forward. If you want to do anything to help encourage him to do that, you can visit our website. It's AmericansForProsperity.org. Sign our action alert. Take 30 seconds, and it's not too late to make your voice heard.
That's the voice of Jason Flores from Americans for Prosperity. More coming up on Justice and Drew right after this. Your 651-989-5855 is the phone number, or use the hashtag TCNT on Twitter. You want to communicate with the show at any time. We are here with Jason Flores from Americans for Prosperity joining us for another segment.
You know, we got a little bit over an hour from now, and Jeremy Piven's coming in the studio.
Yeah, you're going to have to get out of here.
How long can I drag this segment? Can I drag this segment out long enough that I can just, I happen to be finishing up my segment when you're coming in. We're basically equals, Jeremy. This is awesome.
We can't have anyone here that might make us seem less cool. Sam, you got to leave too.
Yeah. Oh, well, if Sam's not making the cut, there's no way I'm making the cut. That's just, sorry.
When we were talking about all the vetoes earlier this week, Drew, you made a comment that there was some vetoes that you were cool with. And the reason I bring it up was I was curious, Jason Flores, from you, of, and let me preface this by saying that I'm more annoyed, because I agree, there's some stuff that I was okay with him vetoing, but I was more annoyed with the fact of how, of his rationale for vetoing them. He didn't give, like, the real good sort of substance as to why he was vetoing them. It was all the GOP's evil and bad and they need to burn. But was there anything that he did veto that you were like, okay, I'm kind of cool with that, regardless of what his rationale was?
No. Not really. I think the other veto, that's it.
Prime.
The Omnibus Prime. I mean, look, if you name a bill Omnibus Prime, it basically has to be near death before it can be brought back, right? So it has to be facing the brink of extinction, literally,
right,
by veto pen, before you really know if it's an Omnibus Prime bill or not. If it's an Omnibus Prime bill, it will become law.
Which actually lends a lot of credence. And Drew, you know, because you've made this comment many times, Dark of the Moon is the Transformer movie that really ticks you off because of the jerk move of the Transformers who decide to let Chicago burn.
Right.
Before
show them. Right. You see?
We needed to show the humans that they needed us before we show up and rise to
the. Well, you couldn't have sit down and had a conversation before executing this plan of destroying one of our major cities?
We had to fake our death to make a point.
You're the worst friends ever.
At least they picked Chicago.
Right, true.
Really, I
have been very appreciative that in most movies as of late, you know, we've gotten off of destroying New York and we've decided to go and destroy Chicago many times. I thought that was a smart move. Why can't they do San Francisco? That's a question that I have.
Yeah, Hollywood's going to do that.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, they're going to write that into the script right away.
Right. So anyways, the stuff that he vetoed, you would have been fine with all of those moving through.
Yeah, I think the one actually that sticks out to me, he vetoed that wild rice sulfate standard bill. And that may seem anybody in the metro, oh, why do I care that much? That's just a northern Minnesota. That bill was absolutely about overreach by every department under this administration and coming up with rules, literally in the case of the sulfate standard, a change to a rule that had never been implemented that was going to cost conservatively over $1 billion for little cities up on the Iron Range and for companies on the Iron Range to comply with because it was so egregious and so far reaching. And they couldn't even say, well, but once we do this, once we spend this $1 billion, here's going to be the benefit to the wild rice.
Right.
That wasn't there.
Right.
So it's really kind of that test case of we need to rein in this governor. And I've been critical of the Republican leadership at times for, instead of tackling the regulatory problems that we have from the ground up, actually reforming the process, putting accountability or measures of the economic impact in place. They've just said, well, in this process, well, this is exempt, or this piece and this business is exempt. They've been doing this one-off treatment of symptoms rather than digging into the core problems with the regulatory regime.
Yeah.
So that as a test case of where the governor's at. Look, he wants a $50 billion state government to run things and screw what the people have to say. Literally. That's the message that should come out of his legacy. Whether on taxes, whether on environmental regulations, whether on literally defunding the legislature, he's not concerned with what the people say. He's concerned with what government has the power to do.
He is spreading the pain so far and wide with the way that he's behaving at the end of this session with all of these vetoes. And if he does end up vetoing the tax bill, he is literally spreading the pain to every single Minnesotan business in order to make a political point. That's going to be his legacy when he leaves office.
Absolutely. He vetoes the sulfate standard bill to appease the environmentalists in Minneapolis, St. Paul. And then 2 days later, I get a text from a friend with an article about how Dayton supports the Iron Range and supports northern Minnesota and supports my... Well, no, you just literally sent them a bill for $1 billion at a time when they're already struggling a little bit economically. It doesn't make sense to me what he does when it comes down to what people actually care about around the state.
Americans for Prosperity, Jason Flores in studio with us. Drew, speaking of spreading the pain, Star Tribune. 18 people were arrested in an immigration protest that shut down the Blue Line light rail line on Tuesday morning, forcing passengers to be shuttled on buses between 46th Street and Terminal 2 at the Minneapolis-St. Paul International Airport. A dozen people demanding an end to deportation sat on the tracks, blocking the train near the Whipple Federal Building at Fort Snelling until they were arrested. Afterwards, six more then sat down, and they were also arrested. All of them were charged with two misdemeanor accounts of interference with transit and trespassing. 130 people
or
were involved in... Or trespassing.
That's a different kind of crime.
130 people were all involved in the protest, organized by... And Drew, thank you for the suggestion to follow that Twitter feed. The Poor People's Campaign in Minnesota Immigration Rights Action Committee.
Yeah. Yeah, follow them on Twitter.
That's a read.
What does that spell out?
Let me find
They just do the PPCMIRAC. If you do that at
MNPPC campaign. Yep.
Okay.
MNPP campaign.
Yeah.
Go follow that account.
They're not activists. They're bullies. That's all this was. Robert Eller Isaacs, a co-minister of the Unity Church Unitarian in St. Paul, said the protest's objective was to draw attention to the immoral activities of ICE and the bankrupt immigration policies of the United States, adding, deportations are breaking up families. I am so sick of that argument. You know what else breaks up families? Like virtually everything. You know, that argument of breaking up families, they use it all the time, and it drives me nuts because it's one of the only times that you hear that one being used.
That is not a legitimate excuse to not enforce laws.
Right.
Because how far do you take that? You know, oh, you're arresting this guy for robbing the bank, but you're going to break up his family.
Well, he shouldn't have robbed the bank.
Let him go. Take the money. Now, I think this protest organized, I mean, was there a specific... ICE action or immigration action taken in the state in the last two days that would have spurred this protest? I mean, why have this just yesterday? What was the reason for the timing?
Maybe it has something.
Maybe that's coming up.
Yeah, it has something to do with yet another bill the governor vetoed.
Yep. The Representative Nick Zerwas, who authored the legislation that would result in more serious charges for blocking the thoroughfares. The latest effort was vetoed by Governor Mark Dayton, who called the legislation wording too vague. Nick said, today's protest is the latest example of why we need increased penalties for those who choose to put the public at risk by blocking highways, the airport, and access to transit. You know, and you get into the story here of the people that were affected by this again, and it's just, I mean, I can't imagine how just upsetting and infuriating it would be to have to be blocked from getting to your job or wherever you need to go because of these idiots.
And somebody, I apologize, I don't remember who, but somebody on Twitter pointed out, you know who uses this line of transit quite often? Veterans trying to get to get to their health care.
Yep.
That's one of the main users, main groups that use this particular line of transit. There's video after video on that Twitter feed of people being carried off by police because they were laying in the light rail lines.
So you can see this. I mean, literally, they do this protest. They're sitting watching the legislative session. They know this protest bill is moving forward. Nothing happens. And then the bill gets passed, and okay, so we're not going to protest today. Now the governor vetoes this. Oh, so we can go lay down on light rail tracks and just get a slap on the wrist again?
Yep.
Oh, well, let's plan it for tomorrow.
Cool. All right, here we go.
I mean, so it literally spurred this kind of action. And look, I'm never going to ever come out against the First Amendment, ever. But you can't, those rights of that protest and of making your voice heard also come with responsibility.
Yeah.
And for something like this, blocking veterans from getting the care that they need at the VA, that comes with higher consequences than this tiny little slap on the wrist.
But guys, they had pre-made signs that said, see us, hear us, and feel us. No.
Hashtag abolish.
What they're afraid of is that they wouldn't have gotten a story if they had just done this on a sidewalk somewhere or in a park somewhere or at the steps of the Capitol somewhere.
They're not activists, they're bullies.
Yeah. Jason Flores, Americans for Prosperity, thank you so much for joining us.
Absolutely, guys.
AFP.org.
AmericansForProsperity.org. Or follow us on Twitter at ProsperityMN.
There you go. Thanks for coming in, man.
Absolutely. Anytime.
Coming up, push to reform Minnesota's flawed system for protecting seniors falls short at Capitol. Elder care, taxes on the list of items left undone. We'll talk with Karen Housley about the new protections. What was done in this, and get some clarity on some of the media coverage.
Justice.
Twin Cities News Talk, AM 1130 and 103.5 FM. If you hadn't seen or heard it yet, Tommy Lahren was in town, had a had an event, decided to go to a brunch in Minneapolis, and was promptly assaulted by the tolerant leftists in Minneapolis. We are going to spend some time talking about that in this awful piece of garbage that Mike Mullen wrote in the City Pages about it.
As if the event itself wasn't bad enough, the coverage for Mike Mullen in the City Pages just makes it even worse. And I know we got to get to our guest. I need to do just one, just to be 10 seconds for a moment of just moment of positivity.
Go for it.
Solo opens tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there's been a lot of screenings that have been happening this week, and the overwhelming public at large going, it's a lot of fun. It's going to be good. Yeah, so I just wanted to. That was for me. That was real. That was really just for me. I had to bring it up a notch and put a smile back on my face.
Senator Karen Housley joins the show. Good morning. Are you excited for the premiere of Solo tomorrow?
You know what? I didn't even know there was a premiere of Solo tomorrow.
It was so great talking to you this morning. No, not at all.
For the premiere.
thank you for coming on the show in such a short notice. Before we actually get to the reason why we want to have you on, and that is the push for this elder care reform. I know there was a bit of an announcement yesterday when it comes to your run for Senate. You've put together this grassroots team. Can you talk about that for a moment?
We have such a great U.S. Senate campaign team, and they're doing all the behind-the-scenes work for the big convention coming up June 1st, so I hopefully get the endorsement. I think, pretty sure I should. But we've got the grassroots team from every CD across the state, and they'll be up there at the convention and just wheeling and dealing on the floor to get all the support, and I'm so proud of the team that we've put together.
Let's dive over to an article out of Star Tribune in a blow to Governor Mark Dayton and families of elder abuse victims. The 2018 legislature adjourned without adopting a series of broad-based reforms to Minnesota's flawed system for protecting vulnerable seniors from maltreatment. One of the things in here was talking about some of what the legislation that was introduced by yourself and others that never made it to the floor for a vote. But there was a lot of sort of frustration from individuals saying that wasn't going far enough. And it seemed as if this effort to offer some type of reform for these elder abuses that we've had you on the show before, it seemed to fall into this argument that we heard against so many of the GOP of, well, I know you were doing something, but it wasn't enough, so we can't go and support it. And it feels like this fell victim to that as well.
And it's a narrative I'm pretty much tired of. You know, if they don't get everything they want, then they're going to dig their heels in, and anything that we did do isn't good enough. We worked so hard on this bill to protect our elders, and when the governor put together his task force, he only took his group of people to be on the task force. He didn't take anybody else into account. So what he came out with, what he wanted, was that's what these people want. Well, guess what? There's a lot more people that go into making decisions when it comes to taking care of our elderly. So I spent the last year listening to all of the stakeholders and also listened to what the Office of the Legislative Auditor recommended that we do to help protect our elderly, and put this all into one big bill. And yeah, they're upset it doesn't go far enough, but I can tell you this, it's a lot farther than what Governor Dayton and Lieutenant Governor Tina Smith did, because they did nothing. The reason for this bill is because of the failure of that administration.
Yeah, and you know, we mentioned it with talking with Jason Flores earlier. That's the nature of compromise. That's the nature of divided government, is nobody gets everything they want. You know, you can look at the bonding bill, the failure of the bonding bill as an example. You know, it was an $825 million bonding bill that was worked on and put together and cobbled together by various committees, and everybody had some input, and then it got voted down because it wasn't enough.
And that's what's so disappointing, you know, because you try to explain to them what's in it. We tried to go as far as we can, but we want to make sure we're protecting our facilities across the state. If some of the things they wanted would have put them out of business, and that's not what you want to do either. You want to make sure you protect our vulnerable adults, yet let's keep these businesses in business. So it was a complete compromise, but they wanted all or nothing, and that's just not going to happen.
So what happens now? Because obviously, you know, this to kind of back up a little bit, you know, this goes back to that report, that 122-page report issued by the Office of Legislative Auditor, talking about the deep and chronic failures, and again from the Star Tribune article. What happens now? What protections and changes are still being looked at or being made? Where do we go from here?
And I thought one of the interesting things with the 122-page report from the auditor, halfway through the audit, they had to make an emergency stop, go to the governor and say, you know, we've never seen this before, but you've got to do something immediately before we even finish this report, because things are so bad in your agency that is supposed to protect our elderly that you've got to do something now. So when they finally did finish, it was March 9th. So from March 9th to May 20th to pull a bill together, which wasn't a lot of time, but we got as much in it as we could. We got one of the things that the family members wanted of the residents was cameras in the room. If they signed off on it and the facility, all facilities now, if a resident wants a camera in their room, they can have the camera. That was one of the things that if your parent is in a nursing home and you're at work and you just want to check in on your mom, you can and run over and see her if she's having some problems. Well, that, if this bill doesn't get signed, that's not going to be in there, and that's really disappointing for the family members. Also, we have a lot of provisions in there to hold our providers accountable. If there's a violation, there's now the ability to for increased fines. There's punishing the perpetrators, and this is the thing. There are so many great caregivers in our nursing homes and our assisted living. So many of great caregivers, but you don't read about those on the cover of the front page of the Star Tribune. You only hear about the bad apples. So in this bill, if you're a great provider, this isn't going to affect you at all. But if you're a bad one, we have things in place that will fine you and will hold you accountable and keep you transparent.
Talking with Senator Karen Housley. Before I let you go this morning, I'm curious to get your thoughts on the end of the legislative session and where everything stands right now.
Well, you know what? We put so many great bills on the governor's desk, and he kept moving the goalposts, and that's the other thing that's disappointing. He worked so hard, and then 2 days before the end of session, he's like, oh, wait a second, I want something else. You can't do that.
Yeah.
So that was really disappointing. I think it went pretty smooth, much better than last year because we got more sleep. And when you get more sleep, you can actually have better bills and not such a sloppy mess. So that was nice to get sleep and be there on the floor for 10 hours with at least 6 hours of sleep. So I thought it went great. I thought we've got a really great tax bill on the table. We've got a great bonding bill and the supplemental bill with all of the provisions that it has for state schools and the opioid addiction and our elder abuse. There's some really, really good bills on the governor's desk that I hope the people of Minnesota will continue to email him and call to make sure he gets those signed.
I hope so as well. I mean, I'd like to see a lot of these bills come to fruition. Main one being tax conformity. You know, if everything else sort of falls by the wayside, it would be unfortunate, but if we don't get that tax conformity bill signed into law, everybody in Minnesota is going to suffer, and that's going to be incredibly, incredibly painful and totally unnecessary.
Absolutely. I agree with you. It's a great bill, and we need that. And come April 15th next year, it's going to be a huge mess if we don't.
Senator Karen Housley, thank you so much for giving us some time this morning. Always a pleasure.
Thanks, guys. Go solo.
Take care.
Bye-bye. All right, we'll invite her back.
She can come back.
So, Toni Lahren came to town. Drew, you had the chance to interview her. She had an event that took place. And look, and I'll be we've talked about this before. You know, there are times when Toni Lahren has taken stances on things that I haven't even necessarily agreed with, and maybe gone too far in a couple of things.
I'm not going to sit here and say I'm like this massive Toni Lahren fan, but the fact is, you know, she's a pundit. She has opinions.
Absolutely.
She goes out there. She says what she says. Yeah. Some of it I'll agree with. Some of it I don't. Just like everybody else in the world.
Yeah, she takes a lot of heat, you know, for just going out there and expressing her opinion. And so the story pops up in the city pages. Toni Lahren's Minneapolis brunch spoiled by thrown drink heckling video attached to the story from Mike Mullen. At the start of the article, it's not a very long article. At the start of the article, Mike Mullen writes that Lahren brings her uniquely bleached brand of trolldom was on display, talking about this event that she held. the one that we had a chance to interview her for.
Right, right. She had an event down at the Pantage Theater, and the next day she decided, as a normal human being would do, hey, I'm going to go out and get some brunch. You don't expect, when you go out to enjoy a meal at a nice restaurant in downtown Minneapolis, that just because of who you are and just because of some things you might have said, that you're going to get assaulted. But that's not the case here in Minneapolis, apparently.
Right. And then look, Mike Mullen, just out of the gate, sort of lays the groundwork with this snide, uniquely bleached brand of trolldom. That's fine. It's your opinion. I do find it a little gross that you decided to, you know, call out the bleached blonde part of it unnecessary, right. But whatever,
you
know, whatever.
You are allowed, sure, to attack conservative women based on their appearance.
Yeah, of course.
That rule has been established, right, for a long time. If you're a conservative woman, your appearance is fair game.
Mike Mullen goes on to say, why final thoughts? Does Tommy know something we don't? Parentheses, doubtful. Okay, whatever. Okay. One short clip shows a woman.
That's such a jerk.
Shows a woman standing to throw a drink. Looks like water to us, at Tomi as she walks past.
Yep.
The Fox News contributor apparently stopped and turned back to confront the water thrower's table, at which point a man yelled, blank that B, yep, blank that H word. I don't even want to say that. Racist blank, yeah, B.
I when I initially saw the story, I was like, oh, we'll grab the audio from these videos, play them on there. Nope.
Nope, can't do it.
Can't do that because it would just be one long bleep.
And then adding, why are you even here? This was according to witnesses of what took place. Well, actually, not the witnesses. The video shows this. Within a couple of seconds, she wasn't. Lauren ended the confrontation and left the scene. TMZ also passed along information from sources close to Tomi, who report that this drink throwing was completely unprovoked. Completely! Exclamation point, writes Mike Mullen. To which then he adds, except for, like, 500 things she said on national television. What, yeah, a double standard.
Yeah.
She expresses, Tomi Lahren expresses her free speech on TV, on national TV, and that justifies, in Mike Mullen's mind, her being assaulted unprovoked in public. So again, like I said earlier, so I suppose that if I am incensed by his ridiculous double standard, then it's totally acceptable for me to throw something at Mike Mullen if I were to see him in public based off his ridiculous standard.
Yeah, his little snide remark there is a joke implying that it was provoked. This was a provoked attack. This person who decided, hey, look over there, it's Tomi Lahren. I don't like her. I'm going to throw a drink on her. I was provoked by things that she had said in Mike Mullen's mind. So, you know, if we want to, we can start going back. He's got a lot of stories in the archives. I'm looking at headlines here. Eric Paulson, corporate puppet, volunteers for a role as internet parrot.
Huh?
I can find plenty of articles where he's made snide comments, derisive comments towards conservatives and other people that he disagrees with. If I get myself to the point where I am so offended and I happen to run across Mike Mullen in public, apparently, by his justification, by his logic here, I am provoked enough that it's okay to assault him.
He goes on to say, just last week, City Pages brought you the story of Tomi Lahren's uncovered Minnesota roots. Norwegians who speak little or no English, we suspect those simple farm folk would have trouble wrapping their heads around why this, and I'm kind of chopping this up a bit, but basically why this mean young descendant of theirs is so well known. Boy, you know, I will say this, though, after reading this and thinking about it more, I kind of feel bad for Mike Mullen that he's so threatened by a young woman that he needs right. to go in and by that he's
never met.
Never met.
You know, that happens to go on TV, happens to make internet videos, says things that he doesn't like. It has rocked his world so much.
It really does speak to how threatened, apparently, Mike Mullen from the City Pages is that she has been able to go out there and have her opinion that he feels the need to justify in this article her being unprovokedly attacked. Not to mention the fact that you made a good point. You retweeted, either tweeted it or you retweeted it, but somebody made a point of, wow, what a poor example for the city of Minneapolis.
Oh yeah,
to have this happen to an individual who simply was having lunch, regardless of who they are.
Yeah, I'm curious what Mayor Jacob Frey has to say about this.
Oh yeah,
does he endorse this kind of behavior? Is he proud of how this woman was treated when she came to Minneapolis? This inclusive, diverse, tolerant
coexist,
city,
Drew.
Right?
Coexist.
I mean, you know, this is an amazing city, and we welcome everybody, and we are very tolerant and diverse and inclusive. And Tommy Lahren comes to town, gets assaulted. I think it would be nice if the mayor of Minneapolis maybe apologized on behalf of how she was treated. More on this, plus your calls, 651-989-5855. I've received some information about who actually threw the drink.
Oh.
Tell you about that coming up next.
Justice